Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Looking for a positive and energizing boost to the mental health conversation with a special bend toward the needs of teen girls and young women? You are in the right place. Welcome to the Mary Walden Show. Yes, there are challenges. Yes, there are struggles. And all across North America, there are people and resources to help and enrich our journey. We hope today's program will help provide you with both information and inspiration as we embark on an in-depth mental health conversation. Now, here is your host, Mary Walden.
Thank you for joining me on the Mary Walden Show. I'm your host, Mary Walden, a licensed clinical social worker. The most currently talked about psychotherapies are known as third wave or third generation behavior therapy. Many of these therapies are evidence-based with randomized trials to support their efficacy. Research aside, however, there's a perception that behavior-based therapies can be overly mechanistic and dehumanizing. This is a criticism that has no basis in regard to functional analytic psychotherapy. FAP was developed by Robert Cronenberg and Mavis Tsai at the University of Washington and is based on the behavior analytic approach first described by B.F. Skinner. The treatment, however, is not mechanistic. In fact, FAP yields psychotherapy relationships between client and clinician that are more intense and personal than are typically found in cognitive behavioral treatments. Today, to help us understand more about functional analytic psychotherapy, we welcome Mavis Tsai. As I said, Dr. Tsai is the co-developer of functional analytic psychotherapy. She is also a psychologist in independent practice in Seattle and director of the FAP Specialty Clinic at the University of Washington, where she teaches and conducts research. She is the author of countless articles and several books, including her most recent, which she co-authored with Robert Cronenberg, Jonathan Cantor, Gareth Holman, and Mary Plummer Loudon. And that book is Functional Analytic Psychotherapy, Distinctive Features, the CBT Distinctive Features Series. It is my pleasure to welcome esteemed clinician, researcher, and my friend, Mavis Tsai. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm just thrilled to have you with us today. But let's start off with the basics. What is functional analytic psychotherapy?
Functional analytic psychotherapy, or FAP for short, is an interpersonally oriented therapy designed to help alleviate client problems that are fundamentally about human relationships, Mary. FAP uses behavioral principles to create a sacred space of awareness, courage, and love, where the therapeutic relationship is the primary vehicle for client healing and transformation. FAP shapes interpersonal effectiveness by nurturing clients' abilities to speak and act compassionately on their truths and gifts, to engage in intimacy, and to fully give and receive love.
And so the operative word that is particularly striking, I think, is this notion of love and cultivating that sentiment between therapist and clinician. That's very different from what we historically understand behavioral therapies or therapy in general to be.
We emphasize the concept of therapeutic love. There's just a dearth of words to describe love in the English language, and people think of love as typically romantic love, and therapeutic love is where we put the client's interests first. Whatever I do, I I'm always thinking what's in the best interest of the client. And there's a lot of authenticity and genuineness in how we interact. And there's this feeling of intense caring that gets generated. And what else distinguishes FAP from other behavior therapies is that we really focus on the mechanism of change, which is noticing and responding effectively to client problems and improved behaviors as they occur during the session. So FAP is about the transformative power of therapeutic love and interpersonal connection. And what we as FAP therapists try to do is we strive to co-create intense and unforgettable relationships. We reflect what's special and precious about our clients by engaging in awareness, courage, love, and behaviorism, which is the essence of FAP. And as we model taking risks and speaking our truths compassionately, we challenge our clients to be more vulnerable and authentic and to bring forth their best selves.
So it's a modeling of taking risk relationally, right there, right in the session, right in front of the client for their benefit to be able to learn to put that type of behavior, manifest that type of interaction in their personal life?
We as therapists definitely show up in a way that is transparent and vulnerable, but in the best interest of the client. We don't want to blow clients out of the water if they're really shy of that kind of connection. Mm-hmm. So we may go into it slowly, but we are real in the room, and we notice what it is that they're doing, how their issues show up mm-hmm. in the therapy room and in the relationship with the therapist.
So how does a clinician identify what those relevant behaviors are for that particular client at their level of connection or ability or awareness?
First, we listen really carefully to what the client is wanting out of the therapeutic relationship. So let's say a client comes in and they're depressed and they want to work on being undepressed. Well, I would look at how does their depressive behavior show up in the room with me? Do they not make very much eye contact? Do they put themselves down? Do they slouch in their seats? Do they say things that show their lack of self-confidence? Do they not follow through with their homework? I really try to bring it into the relationship as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, looking at what they want to work on and then seeing how it might show up in the room. And then really noticing how does this client impact me? How does this client have a negative effect or a positive effect? How does this client interact with me? Is he or she avoidant of my questions? Do they pull away from me when we're close? Does client's problems show up and what forms do these behaviors take? So let's say a client tends to withdraw during close interactions. Well, it might look different for different people. So for some people, they might joke. Others might cry excessively. Others might start coming late to session or not showing up at all or being silent. So each person is different in terms of how they might exhibit a particular type of withdrawing behavior. And we're just trained to really notice the idiographic characteristics of clients.
So I think some of our listeners may find that this is a very different idea than what they typically understand therapy to be, which can be very historical in nature. Rather, what you're describing is much more in the here and now, with the clinician being very tuned in to what's going on in the room.
Yes, and we are also very interested in client histories.
Mm-hmm.
So I typically will ask for clients to write up a life history for me ahead of time so that we can hit the ground running, so that I have a sense of the most important people and life events that have shaped who they are. Some people don't want to do that, and they want to tell me their history. That's that's fine. But in order to be fully compassionate, I think it's important for FAP therapists to understand the most important ways that our clients have been affected by the people important to them.
Mm-hmm. And give more meaning to how they may be presenting in session with regard to avoidant type behaviors or that kind of thing, if it's evidence of trauma and that sort of thing?
Right.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss the fundamentals of functional analytic psychotherapy, or the five rules of functional analytic psychotherapy. We will continue our discussion with researcher and clinician Mavis Tsai. Please stay tuned to The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
15 to 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this were any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
9 different energy systems make up the energy body. Energy is all around us and connects us. Energy exerts a major control over our biology and is a big reason why you should be tuning in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Deatley. We'll explore energy balance techniques, tips, and patterns to keep your flow of energy optimal to maintain maximal health. By adopting these techniques, you will keep your energy body and physical body in harmony. Listen for Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness. Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at Voice America TRN or twitter.com/Voice America TRN.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back to The Mary Walden Show. We are speaking with clinician and author Dr. Mavis Tsai. Mavis, before the break, we started to talk about the five rules, and we want to talk about what are these fundamental elements of functional analytic psychotherapy.
So the five rules are, they're not hard and fast rules. They're more like rough guidelines, and they are quite simple, but as in the game of chess or Go, you can spend a lifetime perfecting how you do the rules. And what I'd like to do, Mary, is run through them really quickly and then go through an interaction with you illustrating what it's like on both ends to be involved in a logical or ideal FAP interaction where all five rules are used. The first one is just to be aware of clinically relevant behaviors or CRBs, which is what I was talking about, just really being present and noticing how the client shows up in the room with problems and improvements. The second rule is to evoke clinically relevant behaviors, or CRBs, to act in ways that bring these behaviors into the session so that they can be reinforced. The third is to be naturally reinforcing or therapeutically loving to block behaviors that are problematic and to pull for and really genuinely reinforce the target behaviors or what it is that clients want to have more of in their lives. The fourth is to notice the impact of what we're doing. Just because we think we're being reinforcing or effective doesn't mean that we are. So we need to notice in the short run and the long run how effective we're being. And that will often involve asking the client, how did that feel for you, or what did you think of what I just said or what I just did? And the fifth rule is to both interpret and to generalize to help the client understand from the context of his or her history why they are acting or feeling the way that they are, and then to bring their improved behavior into focus and ask them to take it on the road so that it would be a homework assignment. You're able to act this way with me. How can you do this in your daily life? So to illustrate those rules with you, Mary, I'm going to ask you to just be as present as you can with me and open in this moment.
And okay.
To just answer the question, first thing that comes to mind that feels kind of vulnerable for you to say, like what do you long for?
Peace and connection with my family.
Peace and connection with your family. So as you talk to me, it's harder because I can't see you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to engage in role one right now. I'm trying to be aware of what your CRB1s or your problem behaviors might be and what your CRB2s or target behaviors might be as you do this with me. And I might very directly ask a client about that. I mean, what do you think? I'm putting you in this evocative situation, asking you as the radio show host, what do you long for? What might your CRB1s or 2s be? I think a CRB2 or target behavior is just for you to say, yeah, I'm game. I'll do this.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Participating is definitely a CRB2 for this kind of interaction. I think the relevant behaviors are what I think for many women is that we kind of say yes to too many things in our work, in our professional lives, and that can create distance in our personal lives.
So a CRB1 or clinically relevant behavior 1 is a problem behavior in the moment with me.
Mm-hmm.
How would saying yes to too many things and being too busy, I mean, I know that can interfere with your sense of peace and connection, but in this moment with me, how might that show up?
Well, that might show up in committing to you or to committing to having longer interactions or making professional commitments, pleasing, that kind of thing.
So a lot of behaviors might be both a CRB1 and a CRB2.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're not sure if you're saying yes to me is a CRB1 or a 2. It could be a 1 in that you're trying to please me as your talk show host, and it could be a 2 in that you're just kind of jumping in and taking a risk and kind of being vulnerable. And,
right.
And everything that I'm doing so far, I'm engaging in a lot of rule 2 or evocative behavior. I suspect I'm putting you slightly outside, taking you slightly outside of your comfort zone.
Yes.
You're used to asking. Yes, she's kind of giggled. Yeah, you're used to running the show. You're used to asking the questions. And so I'm being evocative. I'm doing rule 2. And I'm going to do a rule 3, which is right now to say, Mary, I appreciate you going this route with me and just being open to, you know, whatever happens. So how can you, given that you're longing for peace and connection with your family, how can you show up in the moment and take care like, pay attention to that longing, even though you're not with your family? How can you tap into that and make space for that longing, given that you're interacting with me?
Well, I think it's about even being able to say what it is that I long for and that I want, and being my experience of you, of being validated and taking that risk by saying, talking about these things in this format. And so how I might use that outside of this experience is to go out of my way to maybe limit some work interactions, to create more space for family, to create more space for relationships outside of work.
So, Mary, we have this history together as friends and colleagues, and it's very easy for you to like jump ahead, and you just went to rule five. You just
sorry.
Okay, no, it's okay. It's great. You kind of tapped into, okay, to be more peaceful and connected, I need to be more connected to myself. I need to make space for what it is that I feel and I want, and I express that to you. Just by saying, I want more peace and I want more connection, like I'm in this moment more. And I'm going to be, by being aware of that and by saying what it is that I need, it allows for more connection, for more peace. And what I'm going to nudge you a little further. I'm doing another rule too. What would increase your sense of connection with me in this moment?
It's my struggle to increase my connection. I am constantly dancing in that pleasing world. So to increase my connection with you is to hear that, my responses are appropriate, and it's definitely a CRB1 for me to even say that out loud. So, and to
a CRB1 is a problem behavior, and so for you,
I mean, CRB2.
So for you to say it out loud is a
CRB2
and a target behavior. It's two. Okay,
for sure. To be direct about that, and then to have expectations around relationships is definitely a CRB2 for me. And so in this moment would be to have some, for me to be able to express some need to you, that I might need this relationship to fulfill in this moment.
What would that be?
So I guess it would be validation that I'm saying the things that you want me to say.
So often it's the case that what we're doing is both a one and a two, and it's like, well, I have all these needs and I need to be validated, and I want to know that I'm doing the right thing, and that's a one, but saying it as a two, and mostly you're being so genuine with me, Mary. I just feel my heart melting. I feel like you're being real, and that just really increases my sense of connection with you. And so what's this like for you? I'm doing a rule four right now, just checking to see how is this going. Did you hear what I just said about feeling increased connection to you, and what was that like?
It's simultaneously wonderful and uncomfortable to hear that genuine, to hear you express your feelings to me, and it's compelling for me because even when we get the things that we want or we feel we need, it can be uncomfortable to receive them. And there's simultaneously joy and warmth and fear hearing that, and discomfort hearing that.
Mm-hmm. And you did it again where you were just totally genuine, both positive and negative. It's not so negative, but it's like a really full array of feelings. It wasn't just, oh, it was just great. You were just really, really genuine with me. You know, it felt good, and it's anxiety-provoking to get what you want. Just, I think it's really validating for your audience mm-hmm. to hear that. Mm-hmm. And then, as you did earlier, you kind of just took what came up for you here, and you said, well, this means that I can do it elsewhere. I can show up more fully, express what it is that I'm thinking and feeling. And that's going to increase my sense of connection. Mm-hmm. You didn't say it exactly in these words, but it's like saying yes to what it is I want more of and no to what I really don't want. Would you say that's, how would you summarize, Mary? If you were to take one thing away from our interaction that you could apply to your daily life, what would it be?
It would be to voice what my expectations are or longings are, and have faith that they would be returned, and also that that there will be some discomfort in that experience, no matter what the response, and that truly we can tolerate that discomfort. I can tolerate that discomfort. Clearly, right here on the radio, I just tolerated the discomfort. So it's really possible in private life, even with a seemingly familiar people, as are we familiar with one another.
I really appreciate your being willing to illustrate the five rules with me. I think it's just much more meaningful given how we did it. I'm hoping that it gives your audience a much deeper sense of what it's about. And if I were a member of the audience, I would just be really enamored with you, Mary. It's like, wow, what a talk show host we have here. So the main idea that I want people to take away is that whatever it is that you can manifest in the moment, whoever it is that you're with, if you can do that in the moment, that gives you the power to do it with other people in other moments.
It is incredibly powerful, and I am so glad that we could walk through this example so people can have the experience of witnessing this rather than just a list of how-tos. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will continue our wonderful discussion with researcher and clinician Dr. Mavis Tsai. Please stay tuned to The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Join Patricia Raskin, the host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 11 Pacific. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call to Positive Living, Mondays at 11 Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back to the Mary Walden Show. We are speaking today with clinician and author and co-developer of functional analytic psychotherapy, Dr. Mavis Tsai. Mavis, before the break, we did a very evocative and real example of how a clinician can learn to do functional analytic psychotherapy by facing their vulnerability and their avoidance in session with clients. And it was just a very powerful, it really is an active pursuit on behalf of the clinician to face their own vulnerabilities, to be able to be the most effective and the most present for clients they can be.
Right. You were playing the role of both client and therapist. You weren't playing the role of therapist. You are a therapist. And that is something that we ask all our therapists to do, which is they need to have the kind of training that, well, where they experience everything that they're going to ask of their clients. So they engage in all the FAP exercises that we might be giving to our clients. And in fact, you attended a weekend training in Seattle, and I'm curious as to what your impressions were of how FAP training affects therapists based on your experience.
FAP training is incredibly opening. It helps you not only become more effective as a clinician, but by definition, to be able to do this work, you must, going through the training helps you peel back your own layers and your own defenses and to understand what's in play for you as a clinician in session with your clients. That, because as much as we talk about, you know, clinicians and clients, we're talking about two human beings with their own experiences and histories that come to the table to engage in a relationship, a therapeutic relationship that's designed and intended to support the client in their pursuit of manifesting change, improving their life, understanding things more, healing, whatever the case may be. It's certainly directed and developed to support that client in their pursuit. And side by side with that, it's a human interaction, and FAP training is immeasurably valuable in helping clinicians really understand what they bring to the table and what might need attention. How we can identify things within ourselves makes it easier to be able to identify those things in other people. In a situation such as a therapeutic session. So I highly recommend it, whether you think you want to become a FAP therapist per se, or you just want to be able to enhance the work that you already do with clients in whatever modality you primarily pursue. I mean, it's a training that will bring a genuineness and a realness to your work that will really serve your clients well.
That was so well said, Mary. I'm so glad that I asked you to talk about FAP training and that you've done FAP training as opposed to me talking about it.
It's terrific. It's terrific. Well, one of the things I wanted us to share with listeners are some examples of some FAP interventions that might be helpful to our audience that they could even do on their own. Which ones, what do you recommend?
One that I might suggest trying right now, if you have the opportunity, I'm talking to our listeners right now, is that sometimes we do what's called a non-dominant hand exercise. I may do this as early as the first session with a client. And we don't have FAP exercises per se in that we will do the same thing with every client. Some people will never see this. So it's really up to you as to whether this speaks to you, and you can adapt it to yourself however you want. The idea is for you to take a sheet of paper and to write really quick responses with your non-dominant hand to the stem sentences that I'm going to give you. So, Mary, I'm going to ask you to participate in this, and I'm not going to ask you to, like, tell me all the answers to your questions, to the questions that I pose. I might ask you to share something that you feel semi-comfortable sharing. So the rationale behind using your non-dominant hand, so if you're right-handed, you would use your left hand. The rationale is that it short-circuits your typical way of thinking and writing, and because of that, it brings up more primal and childlike responses. You can't write forever. You could probably just write a few words, and I really don't want more than that. It's whatever comes to mind, first thing that comes to mind, especially if you want to avoid putting it down. Remember, this is between you and yourself, and it's important to be honest with yourself. So just jot down the first thing that comes to mind with your non-dominant hand. I've got 10 stem sentences. I'm going to go relatively quickly. So, Mary, you're only going to have time to jot down a couple words, probably. Ready to go?
Yep, let's go.
Okay. I feel. I need. We've covered this one. It's I long for. I'm scared, so this can be I'm scared of, or I'm scared that. The next one is I'm struggling with. I dream of. I pretend that. I've never done this on the radio before, Mary, and I'm really aware of not wanting to have dead air space.
I think it's terrific, though. I think it's great to be able to walk everybody through it and give them some time, and hopefully some of our listeners have done this with us in real time.
Okay.
It's really powerful.
That's what I'm wanting people to do. I've got a few left.
Go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, Mary. It's hard for me to talk about.
Okay.
If I had the money, I would.
Okay.
And the final one, if I had the courage, I would. Whatever comes to mind, if I had the courage, I would.
Okay. So I really hope that our listeners took some time to do that.
Yeah, and what was the feeling? So we'll do this in a workshop, and our therapists who do this, they're typically, you know, pretty thoughtful and emotional at the end of it, and I'm wondering, what was this like for you? I know you're playing many different roles right now. So it might have been hard for you to just concentrate on it, but what was it like trying to tap into these questions?
Well, I think these are very, these definitely tap into your vulnerability of the things that you, maybe don't want to come to the surface so quickly. But there's something about that non-dominant piece that really moves through that barrier.
Yeah, so this very quickly gets to the essence of what a person is about, mm-hmm. what means the most to them, what they're struggling with, what's most salient for them at that particular time. And so if a client is willing to do this with me in the first session and willing to share his or her answers, it just tells me a lot. Mm-hmm. Is there a moderately risky answer that you would be willing to share with us, Mary?
Well, I think the one that I was definitely compelled by was, I believe, the fourth one, fear.
I'm scared.
And that was fatigue.
Yeah. You're scared of fatigue.
Yes.
So that's sort of the second time that it's come up, which means that you're probably doing too much, Mary. Because
mm-hmm.
you said something earlier about saying yes to too many things, and
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's really.
It's a very captivating exercise, and I invite our listeners, if you take the time to do this exercise while you're listening, if you'd like to email that to me, I'd be delighted to post these answers anonymously on the website just so other people can get a sense of, you know, people taking part in this type of exercise and what comes up for different people. I think that would be really terrific. You can email me at change@marywalden.com.
I just want to say one more thing about this exercise before we move on, which is mm-hmm. your response to the stem sentence, if I had the courage, I would. People think that they need the courage to do something that feels scary. And in terms of a behavioral view, it's fine for you to, it doesn't require courage for you to do things that feel like they're courageous. You just need to figure out what are the environmental variables, who are the people who can support you. Like, what is it that you need to do that you feel like you need the courage to do? You basically need the steps to do them, and you can do it even though you're scared.
I think that is such a powerful point, that if you wait to feel okay about everything that you do, a whole lot of life can pass you by.
That's right.
We're going to take a quick break. Believe it or not, we're out of time in this segment, but we'll be right back with our discussion with clinician and researcher Dr. Mavis Tsai. Please stay tuned to The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
15 to 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this were any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
Could you be living with imbalances and not even know it? Tune in to Hormonal Happy Hour with Dr. Angela DeRosa. Hormone imbalances can be the root cause of several common issues, including weight problems, heart disease, decreased mental function, and even impotence or other problems in the bedroom. Whether you're a teen or in your golden years, there's a lot to take from one episode of Hormonal Happy Hour. Stop by every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
The largest syndicated alternative health talk program has come to the Voice America Network. The Dr. Bob Martin Show is the program that will answer your health questions and help you to heal your own body of many different ailments. Each week, you'll hear the answers that Dr. Bob gives to his callers that help them to be their own doctor most of the time. We'll also discuss developments on the healthcare front and what you need to do to keep your body in top form. The Dr. Bob Martin Show airs Wednesday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back to the Mary Walden Show. We are delighted to be speaking today with clinician and author Dr. Mavis Tsai. Mavis, tell us more about the interpersonal mindfulness study going on there at the University of Washington.
This is a really fun project that we're doing, my spouse and co-collaborator and co-developer of FAP is the principal investigator of the study, but basically we are looking at the impact of traditional mindfulness versus an interpersonal mindfulness where we use FAP rationale, and we look at mindfulness from an interpersonal viewpoint. Most people think of mindfulness as a very intrapersonal process where they're just focused on their own thoughts and focus on their own breathing. And so in the study, we assigned subjects to either a regular meditation group where they were led through a regular type of meditation or an interpersonal meditation, or they were assigned to a nature control group. So what I would like to do is just take some of your listeners through a very brief version of our interpersonal mindfulness process, which was shown to have an impact on people's relationships. Even after this brief intervention, it just improved their relationships outside
of the
study.
Okay, let's walk through it.
Mm-hmm. So, but what it would involve, Mary, is for people to kind of put things down and to be able to close their eyes and to really listen to the meditation, to be involved in visualizing what I ask them to visualize, experience what I ask them to experience. So I don't know how many people listen to you while they're driving or doing other things.
Yes, we would rather them not do this mindfulness exercise while they're driving. If they are, maybe they could sort of make a note to themselves to download us on iTunes and then listen at a later time. But go ahead with that disclaimer. Go ahead.
So first, just be aware of your breath. And Mary, I'd like you to go along and do this with me, and I'm just going to check in with you as to what the impact was for you. So feel your breath, the inhale and the exhale. And this is true for all different types of mindfulness and meditation. All focuses on the breath. Basically, if you're aware of your breath, it's very difficult to be tense. So right now, just feel the rise and fall of your breath. Try letting your breath breathe you rather than the other way around. Find a rhythm to your breathing that's not too fast and not too slow, not too deep and not too shallow. With each breath, allow yourself to settle into your body even more. What I'd like to have you contemplate next is that everyone has a comfort zone when we relate to other people. This comfort zone is normal, and it varies depending on your own relationship style and who you're relating to. However, it's often possible to improve relationships by stepping a bit out of your comfort zone and and just becoming slightly more open with the other person by making small changes in the degree to which you reveal thoughts and feelings. It takes a certain degree of risk and courage to take even a small step outside of your comfort zone when talking to the other. So I'd just like you to picture a person in mind that you would like to become closer to. And then, as you consider or contemplate your comfort zone, consider how you live your moments. In general, who do you care about? And how deeply? Let yourself experience the sensation of opening your heart so that you can offer and receive even more when the opportunity is present. Even right now, and in every moment, you're either closing or opening. Try breathing with an open heart, awakening to what is right now, just as you are. Experience every moment. Experience this moment as an important moment of your life. In this moment, see if you can allow yourself to feel alive, radiant, and free. Contemplate the thought that what you can do ripples out and affects others. Your posture and breath can radiate caring or even love. Your words can inspire other people. Your actions can open hearts and minds. At every moment, you can choose to open and to give fully, or you can choose to wait. Both of these options can be accepted without judgment. And now, relax even more. Be aware of your body, your breath. Accept whatever you notice as neither good nor bad. Picture that person in your mind that you chose. I asked you to choose someone that you wanted to get closer to. Contemplate how the comfort zone that you have with that person determines how much you're comfortable in revealing thoughts, feelings, and in expressing positive feelings and appreciations. Now consider how you could slightly expand that comfort zone and move more in the direction of expressing a bit more of your thoughts, appreciation, and or positive feelings to that person. Just a bit more than you have up to this point. This would, of course, involve taking a certain amount of risk and being more courageous, since you're not sure of how the person might react. Think specifically of what you might say to that person if you were to make this slight shift. Maybe you could tell them how you feel when you interact with them. You might tell them something about what you appreciate that they've done or about how they treat you. For some people, this might be saying something like, I like spending time with you. For others, it might be, I like talking to you, or I feel happy when I'm with you. For others, a baby step outside the comfort zone goes to the other end of the continuum, such as, I love you. The idea is to think about what a baby step outside the comfort zone would be for you. And imagine, visualize yourself seeing, just visualize yourself taking this step. In your mind's eye, involve all your 5 senses. What does it feel like? What does it look like? What do you hear yourself saying? And then imprint this visualization of you doing what it is that you would like to do, how you want to interact with this person that you selected that you would like to be closer to. Notice what you're feeling and just try to accept your experience as neither good nor bad. And then gradually let your eyes open. Come back to this moment. I'm going to check in with you, Mary. Where are you and how was that?
Just an incredibly powerful exercise to
to help bring to the forefront what it is that, what the risk is to reach out, and really the reward being so great when it's coming from a place of love to be warm and accessible and expressive to another about how you feel and what you would like with them, to cultivate with them. And it was a great moment of quiet and connection for me.
What I'm aware of right now is, I'm wondering how much time we have left. I'm wondering who you chose as your person. I'm not wanting to put you on the spot. I also felt feelings of love for you as I was thinking about you. And so those are all my thoughts. Thought I'd share them with you.
Thank you. Thank you. We do only have just about 2 minutes left in our time here. And yes, it was a great experience. I do want us to get to just a brief moment to the other projects that you're in, because we are going to have you back, Mavis Tsai, because there's just so much more that I know you have to share with everyone. And I want us to talk more about creating intimacy and closeness in relationships. I know a project of yours is the Intimacy Now project, which we would like to speak more about that at your next visit. So will you come back and join us?
I will definitely come back and join you. You've been tremendously reinforcing to talk
well,
to.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mary.
Dr. Mavis Tsai is the co-developer of Functional Analytic Psychotherapy. She's also a psychologist and independent practice in Seattle and director of the FAP Specialty Clinic at the University of Washington. You can learn more about Dr. Mavis Tsai and Functional Analytic Psychotherapy at www.faptherapy.com. If you're looking for the foundational texts on functional analytic psychotherapy, you will find all of them on Amazon. Search Mavis Tsai, M-A-V-I-S, T like Tom, S-A-I. Please join us again for more in-depth discussion of mental health and well-being on the Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to the Mary Walden Show on iTunes and check out the Inspiring Women podcast series at inspiringwomenseries.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, be well. And remember, we're building a girl rally one young woman at a time.
Thank you for listening today. The Mary Walden Show can be heard every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Central Time, and 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great week. And remember, Mary is building a girl rally, one young woman at a time. So please join us.